Good morning. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Polly.
And by God's grace, in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. Thanks. A few years ago, my husband and I decided that we were getting back to basics, and I will explain all that as I talk. And one of the basics is, I got sober in Dallas, Texas. And if you get sober in Texas, you give your sobriety date, because they say if you don't give your sobriety date, it's probably because you don't have one. And so when I got back to basics, I got back to giving my sobriety date. And that feels really good. I'd like to thank George for inviting me here. This has been wonderful, and I'd like to thank Sharon for picking us up at the airport. That was wonderful. And the flowers and the fruit and the shirt and the cup. I mean, you guys really do lay it on the speakers. It's great. Thank you, thank you. It's been wonderful. And I think it's even better that we have this beautiful snow. I think that's just gorgeous. I love the winter, and we just don't get a chance to have that in Southern California. As the other speakers have told you, you have, as far as I'm concerned, the finest members of Alcoholics Anonymous are sharing this weekend. I just feel like all the others have said, it's just so honored to be here with the people that are here. And TED Talk Friday night, and I know you guys got a treat here in TED, but I see him every Monday night. It's no big deal. We go to the same home group, and we're there no matter what. And it's wonderful to be able to share a podium with Ted, and we're going to share it and share it and share it this year. So that's really neat, because it's the first time since about 5 or 6 years ago. We did it in Las Vegas. Yeah, so it's just really special. And you heard Karen, and one of the things I've just fallen in love with Karen, and I think what's really neat is we've been corresponding and getting in touch with each other a little bit more, and that's really special, because you bring a zest to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's wonderful. And Bonnie and Sean are really, really special to Dave and I. And Sean and I met a lot of years ago, because we worked on the San Fernando Valley Convention Committee. And that was a lot of years ago, and it's kind of been a nice relationship ever since, and that's just really special. And I just love you and Bonnie to pieces. It's really special to be with you. I just feel honored to be here. And there's a lot of people knew about this little story I'm going to share with you. And if you're not an animal lover, you're going to probably say, oh, what a lame story. If you are an animal lover, then you're going to understand. But I came here Friday with a very, very heavy heart. And my husband and I are just nuts about two little Yorkshire Terriers. And they sleep with us. And, we have people babysit them when we're out of town. These are our babies. And this past Monday, my daughter-in-law came over to our house and inadvertently let out our little male Yorkshire Terrier. He's 9 years old, and he's about 6 pounds, and he's just life. I mean, he's just so much love, you can't believe it. He just cuddles up to everybody that sits on my sofa and gives a fist step and just makes them feel better. And we couldn't find him. But one of the things that kept happening is every time I'd see somebody, I'd say, you know, pray for Winston. Just pray for Winston, because Dave and I's heart's broken because of this little puppy. And so we just started taking the action like you taught us to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we put up signs, and my son, he and my daughter-in-law were devastated as well. And he would go to the pound every day. And So yesterday, Dave was taking a run around our neighborhood. And I don't know of those of you who've ever had the opportunity to hear Norm Alpe talk. But Norm Alpe used to talk about inches and seconds, that life is about inches and seconds. And these two young girls were going into their home, and Dave yelled at them because he was starting to ask everybody around our neighborhood if they'd seen our little dog. And this girl, so just inches and seconds, a nanosecond, and they'd have been in the house. And Dave stopped him, said, "Hey, just a minute, I want to ask you a question." And said, "Did you see this little dog?" And they said, "Well, no, we haven't seen the little dog, but down at our school is a sign that says somebody found a dog." And so Dave jumps in his truck and runs down to the school, and sure enough, it says, black and white, small male dog, found Monday. And he went to the lady's house, and she said, "Yeah," she said, "an 18-wheeler nearly hit him, inches and seconds, and we got him." And Winston's home. And the power of prayer, because I just was so exhausted last night because I so identified with Sean. I don't know if you've had do this, but I was just holding on. See, my heart was broken, and I just didn't want to feel the pain. So I would just hang on and try to just do a whirlwind of activity just so it wouldn't have to hurt so bad. And I'm like, Sean, you want to know how I feel? I haven't got a clue. You know, maybe next week I'll know how I feel. But I've sort of learned to understand that feelings are just things. They're just things. That the thing that's necessary is that I do the action. And that if I take the right actions, then the feelings will change. But the one thing that Dave and I said when we parted Friday morning is we looked at each other and we said, we're just not willing to give up yet. That we just believe that somehow he's okay. And I just want to let you know that that's my God. That, and had we not found him, I'm certain that a family who needed him much worse than us would have had him. And that's the way I've begun to live my life, is that there are just no negatives in God's world. Everything is in perfect order. I may not understand the order, but it's in perfect order. And Karen talked to you yesterday afternoon about a man named Clancy. And Clancy saved my life because, and I agree with you, Karen, he's the finest speaker in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he is a teacher that has taught me things that I carry all the time. And I don't know, I'm sure that, Rick and has the tape, and Terry, that Clancy has a tape out called Alcoholism, a disease of perception. Because you see, I finally understood what the problem was. The problem was my perception. My perception of reality is distorted. And the longer I stay around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have began to have a different perception. Because you see, nobody in my entire life ever mistreated me but me. I was always loved, and I was always cherished. I had the finest parents a person could ever have. And I was the only person who never knew. Because, you see, I was so dead inside, and I was so sick with a soul sickness called alcoholism, that I was loved, and because I was so sick, I could never, ever feel the love. And today, thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, my perception of reality is different. And Clancy also talks about taking actions contrary to the way you feel. And if you'll take these actions, those actions will change your thinking, and your thinking will change your feelings. Because you see, prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I never ever knew that you had to first think it before you could feel it. And so the more I change my thinking, the more I change my feelings. And if I take the actions necessary, as dictated in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, then my feelings will change. So today I've gotten to know that feelings are just feelings. And if I need to feel differently, then I need to take an action. And that action is probably contrary to the way I feel. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a higher power that even resembles the higher power I have today. Because, you see, besides being a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of old ideas about God. And, you see, my perception was, as I would sit in these rooms, now, my mother is a wonderful woman, and she has never, ever had the perception I have about the Baptist Church. She still goes, and it gives her all the things she ever needed. And I'm here to tell you, I'm not here to bash churches, because I'm not here to bash anything. I take the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous very seriously, and I have clear direction of what I'm supposed to do here. And what I'm supposed to do here is share my experience, strength, and hope. No more. It is not my place at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous to tell you the things that, you know, how I feel about different political controversies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am only here to share my experience, strength, and hope. I am a very opinionated person. If you want to know, I'll be glad to tell you after. But I don't use the podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous to do that. At any rate, my perception was that these preachers would get up behind the podium, and here was this little girl sitting out in the congregation, and these preachers would get up at the podium, and they'd slam their fist on the podium, and their faces would turn red, and their veins would stick out, and they'd lean into the congregation, and they'd say things like, "If you've thought it, you've done it." Now, I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. And I started to take on this attitude, and there's no way I'll ever be good enough for God. And I remember this awful feeling came over me as I sat there and I said, "I'm 9 years old. How did I get so bad so fast?" And I just took on that feeling of just being this terribly horrible person with these horrible thoughts that would never, ever, ever be good enough for God. And I walked through my life until I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I truly knew in every area of my life that I would never, ever be enough. And that's the way I felt. I would never, ever be enough. There's no big, you know, I don't have any gory stories to tell you. I wish I did. I was just one of these people who just believed that I wasn't enough and that there's no way that I would ever be enough. And my whole goal in life was I just could not live life on life's terms, and I felt like I didn't have the right to occupy space on planet Earth. And that's the way I felt. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have introduced me to a God beyond anything I could have ever dreamed of. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you tell me where God is. Because, you see, my perception was, when I was going to those Baptist churches, that God was somewhere up there. But thanks to a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have told me where God is, and God is deep within. And you've told me how to find God, and I search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand Him, expresses Himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know about any of you, but God has never sent me a fax. But I'll tell you what He does send me. He sends me you. And God speaks to me through the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful to this program because today I can hear you. And 18 years ago, I couldn't hear. today I get to sit and have breakfast. And Sean and I took a few risks at breakfast. And what we found out was, is that we're going the same way. And, you know, you begin to find that as you go along in Alcoholics Anonymous that you just have these kindred souls. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I also have a higher power who's got a dynamite sense of humor. And I want to share that with you. My name is Polly. It is not a nickname. It is my name. I am not a Paula or a Pauline. I am a Polly. And if your name is Polly and you're a little girl, you're going to get teased a lot. And I also was one of these little girls that had zits all over my face. And so, you know, besides being called Polly Wants a Cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day, it was things like pizza face. And, you know, none of this stuff does a lot for your self-worth. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative. But everything has a positive outcome. And today I love having the name Polly. Because, you know, there's just not a lot of Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something. Because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift. Because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything that I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 15 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. We have a rule around here called Rule 62. Just don't take yourself so damn seriously. And the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we're people who are just too sensitive. And I'm really grateful for this silly little name because, you know, because of it, it certainly helped me to toughen up. There just are no negatives in God's world. I am also living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from the disease of alcoholism. Now, I have heard in these rooms that you take an alcoholic's family tree and give it a shake, and an alcoholic will fall out. Now, that alcoholic is very possibly my mother's father. And the only reason I say that is I never saw my grandfather drunk. I never saw him out of control. I never saw him act, you know, in any way. The only thing I can tell you is he's the only one in our family who ever drank. And he would drink from time to time. So, from my recollection, he's certainly not any alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic. But that's the only person in my family that ever drank. But I'm here to tell you, you can come to these rooms and you can feel the same. Because when I came to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me, identify with the feelings. Because you see, it's how we felt about what we did when we were drinking. There's all kinds of different things that happen. I mean, my drinking is so wimpy compared to any of the speakers that you heard this weekend. I mean, it's so lame. But the bottom line is I was literally pronounced dead on arrival because of a disease called alcoholism. And it took from me every single piece of me, just like it took that from every one of the speakers here today. this weekend, except our actions were different, but the feelings were the same. So I began to identify instead of compare. And as you would talk about your alcoholic moms or your alcoholic dads, I could identify. Because, you see, I had a father who was full of rage. And, you see, not coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't understand his rage. I didn't understand the madness inside of a person, and they didn't know what to do with that kind of anger. And I would look at my dad just like you'd say you'd look at your dad, and I'd swear there's no way I'll ever be like you. And my dad used to have fits of rage just like a periodic alcoholic. And my mother would say things to me like, "Polly, just be nice. And if you'll just be nice, then Daddy won't have one of his fits." But you see, Daddy always had one of his fits. And when Daddy would have one of his fits, furniture would fly and he'd curse and yell and he'd knock my mom around. And somehow, inside this little girl, I thought it had something to do with me. Had I just been better or done better, then Daddy wouldn't have had one of his fits. And I'd look at him and I'd swear, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." But the irony of it was, I became just like him, only worse. My father never, ever hurt me in any way. But what I did to my two sons as a result of the disease of alcoholism will be there all the days of my lives and their lives. And then I would look at my mom, and I would say, "You're such a wimp. Why don't you stand up for yourself? How can you let him treat you like that?" And I would be so disgusted with her that I would just, you know, it was like, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." And the irony of it is, I became just like her. And I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a disease of negativity. Because, you see, these were the things that were the negatives in my mother and father. But my mother and father were the kindest, nicest people I've ever known. My daddy would have given his shirt off his back to any other person if they needed it. But yet, because of a disease called alcoholism, these were the things I remembered. And I became the worst of both my parents. I was an angry wimp. I was one of these people that was full of rage. And what I would do is I had to look good. God, do I understand Sean? It was absolutely imperative that you look at me and have these wonderful thoughts about me. And I would look good to you. And if you would hurt my feelings, you know, I'd just sort of swallow that down. And I have this beautiful AA sponsor, and Ellen says, "Whatever goes down's got to come up." And what went down was this anger and rage. Because, you see, one of the things that I would do is, it was so important that you think well of me and that you like me. I would do all these kind things for you, and I would put myself out, and you never appreciated me appropriately. And what would happen is that would make me very angry and resentful. And then I would swallow down that anger, and I would go home, and I would take that anger and rage out on my two little boys. I became worse than my parents. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, my perception of reality has changed. And thanks to the steps that Ted talked about. Because, you see, in the steps we have the magic fourth column. And in the fourth column, it talks about what is my part in it. And I began to take responsibility for my own actions. And thanks to this program, I began to see what my part was. And I could see that not only had I been a loved child, but that my parents had adored me. And you see, I'm an only child. And I hated that. Because you know what they say about only children. They're spoiled. And you know, the truth is, I was. I was given so much love, but because of the soul sickness of the disease of alcoholism, I never, ever knew it. And I'm so grateful to this program, because my father died when I was 2 years sober. And I'm so grateful to you because for 2 years, I got to be the kind of daughter in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous you have taught me to be. Also, my mother today is 78 years old. My daddy died when he was 60. And he's been dead for a lot of years now. And my dad was a young man, and he didn't leave my mother with a lot of money. So my mother is 78 years old, and she works full time. I don't really think wimps do that. My mother is self-supporting through her own contribution because she is a responsible person to society. And that's not a person for me to look down on as a wimp. What I've learned because you have changed my perception is this was a hero that I always had and today I look up to. And I'm so grateful that you have changed my perception of reality. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer and I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I had married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And you see, I've never wanted to be responsible for myself. I am one of these people that could not suit up and show up for life. I absolutely could not live life on life's terms. I did not want to live the hand that was dealt me. I always wanted something else. I never could live my life. And at 18 years old, I took a drink of alcohol. It was not a big deal. I don't even really remember it. I can remember my perception was the Baptist church told me that people who drank were bad. And I can tell you these people in the Air Force were good. These were not bad people. These were good people. And I took a drink of alcohol, and it just appeared to be no big deal. But somewhere as the years went on, I knew that something happened to me that didn't happen to them. And I'm going to tell you another story that, you know how we have these recollections and revelations that come to us the longer, you know, more is revealed? That prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had never, ever met another alcoholic. I did not even know another alcoholic because none of the people that we were in the Air Force with are in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, none of them need to be. I had never met an alcoholic until I came to these rooms. Now, I'd seen the movies. I'd seen Days of Wine and Roses and I'll Cry Tomorrow. That certainly wasn't me. I had absolutely no identification with these people. Along about 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. So I know about cold. That is at the very tippy top of Maine. Bar Harbor and Portland are warm spots. This is at the very tippy top of Maine. And I had these two little boys. I did not have a clue how to be a parent. I had no tools in which to be a parent. And it was 50 below zero, and these two little boys were driving me crazy. And I was having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. And I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. You know, sometimes I get really pissed off. I just didn't have any fun. But then again, I never wanted to have any fun. I just wanted to get out. I just simply did not want to suit up and show up for life. I just wanted to somehow drink enough and take enough pills that it would just take me out. I just didn't want to suit up and show up for life. I'd like to tell you a few things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I'm going to talk a lot about what Sean talked about last night because, you see, I believe down to the very depths of my soul that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease. And what's really wonderful is that it is also a family recovery. It is a progressive disease, but it is a progressive recovery. And you see, I call myself a couch potato alcoholic, but I have a son who's sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear James talk from podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous. And James's story is very different than mine because James talks about a little boy who's absolutely terrified because, you see, that little boy is walking back and forth in front of that sofa, and he's certain that his mother is dead and his father is gone, and he is gripped with terror. That's the disease of alcoholism. This disease takes our children and rips their hearts out. And now and then, they'll get here and they'll get help. Sometimes they never do. I'm really grateful today for the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous because you have given me a set of steps. And in those steps, you made me aware of what I did. And then you gave me the amend steps that I could go to my children and I could tell them and I could sit in front of them and say, I'm a child abuser. And for that, I am so sorry. And I'll make you a promise. I will be the very best mom I can be. And the only way I'll ever do that is because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I have a son who's sober in these rooms. But I have another son that was gripped with all kinds of terror. And you see, he couldn't find booze for an answer. So what he did is he did some things that I had done. And that is he began to mutilate himself. So my son carries a lot of scars that ever reminds me of the disease of alcoholism. I'm grateful that you've taught me how to live. I am not someone that came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and said, geez, there's a coffee pot and a dozen donuts, and I think I'll stay. One night I was passed out on my sofa, and if it was any time at night, I was always passed out on my sofa. And my husband jerked me up, and he said, booze and pills are our problem, and if you just didn't drink and if you just didn't take these pills, everything would be okay. And he started throwing the booze down the drain and the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state, and when he was done, I went and passed out on the sofa. And you see, I had taken to drinking things like NyQuil, cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope. And somehow I believed if you couldn't smell me, then you couldn't tell I'd been drinking. And so, of course, I had ceased to go to sleep and wake up. I passed out and came to. And I'm also a blackout drinker, so I definitely understood Sean and Ted. Most of what I tell you, even though I don't talk much about a drunkalog, all of it's hearsay as well. And I came to, and that morning I was just too sick to drive to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And I found myself crawling around my garage floor, going through the plastic bags to turn those bottles up to just get one drop. I had reached the place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas, and it's the place where the Dallas Cowboys play football and where Ray's wearing a shirt. Yay. All of you can boo, that's fine, we don't care. We don't care. And I totaled my automobile, and being a blackout drinker, I got out of my car, having this has all been told to me. I went to a phone booth, and I called the police and told them my car was stolen. And here come the police with my husband. And I go to the Irving Police Station. And I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he says, "Why don't you take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, my husband looked at me and he said, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And I will assure you something, this was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And I entered this treatment center, and they began to take us to a lot of AA meetings, and I loved it. I loved the smiles, and I loved the laughter. But you see, there was something down inside of me that said, "Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholic." And while I was in that treatment center, I had what we call in Texas a jitter house romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and we walk off into happy destiny. We walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was 12-stepped out of a motel in Euless, Texas. And I was brought back into that detox center more dead than alive. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma, that talks about, not the dilemma, but pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. Because you see, sober, I know what happened in that motel room. Sober, I know the kind of mother I've become. Sober, I know the kind of wife I've become. And I could not live sober inside my own skin. My friend Clancy talks again about the disease of alcoholism. And the first time I heard that tape, I was driving down the 405, and Clancy says, "Alcohol has nothing to do with the disease of alcoholism." See, if alcohol were my problem, there would be no reason for me to be here today. But you see, I have a disease called alcoholism, and it's that disease that I have to treat every day. And it's that disease that I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. And there was no way I could live inside my own skin sober. So I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel room. I talk a lot about Eskimos in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love the new name that's kind of going around, and we talk about angels. And there's a lot of people that, I'm real involved in women's conferences, and we talk about angels. But when I get sober in Texas, we talk about Eskimos and how every one of us has an Eskimo in our life and how that Eskimo leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this lady worked with me, and she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And you see, today I know what that something was. That was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way. It was on a half latch. And she pushed that door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Now, needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here this morning. But I want to share with you my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how we all gather up around the tables and we tell our, "Can you top this story?" Well, I didn't go to Skid Row. I didn't super glue anybody's, you know, deal. So how do you talk about being this lame drunk, laying on this sofa, passed out? So, you know, I had to have a, you know, "You can top this story."
So, Mai, you can top this story well. I was pronounced dead on arrival. But like Gar said, I couldn't feel anything. There was no feeling there. There was no gratitude. There was no appreciation for the life that I had been given. Because, you see, I just couldn't find that God that you talked about. And I kept suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just couldn't get that feeling. And I had a secret. And I tried to tell the truth. You see, I had to hit a bottom in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was pretty devastating, and it was behind relationships and sex. I'm just one of those people who was looking for love in all the wrong places, and I just knew if you'd love me enough, that I'd be okay. I didn't understand that the way it was going to work is I was going to have to love you. It had nothing to do with you loving me. And I couldn't find that God. And Dave and I got married, and we moved to Michigan. And I got an AA sponsor there, and I shared the secret that I just don't have this feeling about God. And those magic steps that Ted talked about, and she says, well, Polly, have you worked the steps? Because if you have, then you've taken the necessary action to produce a spiritual awakening. And I said, but I have. And I began, she says, well, why don't you tell me about it? So I began to tell her what I had done. And you see, on April the 11th, 1977, I ended up in a treatment center in Dallas, Texas, a very fancy jitter joint. And I'm like Karen. That jitter joint took us to a lot of AA meetings. And Ray sits here, and I love to share about my relationship with David A. Because it was in that treatment center that I met a man called David A. And he began to give the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you see, 18 years ago, I was fed by a spoon in every meeting, the traditions and the steps. It wasn't a new thing in Texas. We did it every single meeting. And I'm grateful for that. And there was a time when I had this same shame about, oh, my God, I've gotten sober in a treatment center. I've got a $10,000 big book. And it was like, oh, my God, I can't even get sober right. And today I know one more time that God's world is in perfect order. And it happens exactly the way it's supposed to. And I got sober exactly the way I was supposed to get sober. Everything is perfect in God's world. And I began to tell her, and when I got to the fourth and fifth step, you see, I had done one of these four steps in treatment, because this was a five-step treatment center. You know, one of these Hazleton four-step guides, where it's, you know, you write, I was born, and you go on for the next 99 pages. And she looked at me, and she said, Polly, that makes a great novel, but it does nothing for inventory. And she began to show me how to do an inventory exactly as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I fell in love with working the steps as they are laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, occasionally, I will pick up the 12 and 12. But my textbook is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I worked the steps. For me, it worked. And for the women I sponsor, the steps out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened for me is I got that magic fourth column, because I began to see my part in it. And you see, I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a victim. It was never my fault. I was a victim of the Baptist Church. I was a victim of the U.S. Air Force. I was a victim because I was born an only child. I was a victim because I was born a woman. I thought men had it better. I was just a victim. And by showing me how to do a four-step, as it's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to take responsibility for myself, and I'm no longer a victim. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, most of our problems are of our own making. Thank God. Because if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. Because the only way that I'm going to get to change is if you change. But if my problems are of my own making, then the person who has to change is me. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I have to have a profound change and a psychic change. And you know, I got my husband's AA sponsor. I just love him. He says nothing makes him happier than hear about people working on their character defects. He said, I don't know what they're working on, but my book tells me that only God can remove character defects. And what's even more baffling is he'll only remove those that stand in his way of our usefulness to him. I'm grateful today that I know that. Because you see, it's God's deal. I just need to be willing to suit up and show up and take the action and leave the results to God. I began to see my own character defects, and I began to ask God to remove them. Now, I believe that God can come down and go woo, 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 and I'm well. I just don't believe he works like that. So I have been given the past 18 years opportunities to grow. And in hindsight, I'm really grateful for the lessons. And you see, I don't believe that God is hurting me. I believe that I'm only here to learn the lessons that I was put on this earth to learn. And I believe that they have lovingly been given to me. And what happens is I have been given a program that carries me through the good times, and it carries me through the tough times. And you see, I'm like Sean. I believe you get sober, you do all the things that are told to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and somehow I'm never supposed to hurt again, and everything is supposed to be perfect. But you know what I've learned today is that life is in session. And what you have given me is a set of tools to live life on life's terms so that I can suit up and show up for life and to do the next indicated step and not have to go take a drink of alcohol, but instead get on my knees to a God of my understanding or my not-so-understanding and call a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have given me a way of life, and for that, I'm so grateful. Now, I told you earlier, well, first let me tell you about Dave. I met Dave when I was 6 months sober. A lot of people in this room that know Dave. And I am so grateful for Dave. Dave is just one of these solid men. Never gets wavered, just solid. And Dave has loved me unconditionally. And I married Dave when I was 3 years sober, and I believe that Dave has taught me more about love than anybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, while I was self-destructing out there in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to find love in all the wrong places, at 3 years of sobriety, Dave came to me and he said, Polly, I love you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. And Dave and I have been married for 15 years. And I will tell you that I cannot possibly imagine what it could be like to be married to anybody but another member of this program who is as passionately in love with Alcoholics Anonymous as I am. Friday night, Dave was down in Huntington Harbor giving an AA talk while I was sitting here listening to Ted. And that's the way we live our life. We are both committed and dedicated to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I cannot possibly imagine living any other way. At any rate, I want to just tell you a little bit about that relationship. About 9 years ago, Dave and I decided that we probably needed to go find our inner child. You know, this was the thing that was going on. And if you need to go do that, you know, you just may need to go do that. But I'll tell you what Dave and I found out. We found out that we didn't need to find our inner child, that we already were children, that we thought like children, we acted like children, and we behaved like children. What we desperately were in search of was an adult. And I'm here to tell you And only the women who are my age will understand this. It is no, I mean, what an order. I can't go through with it to do adolescence and menopause all at the same time. But I'm really grateful today that I know that my job is to grow up in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one day at a time, I become a little more grown up than I was the day before. Dave and I have learned to love each other. And Sean talked about the traditions in the family. There's a wonderful couple that live in Omaha, Nebraska, or Bellevue, really. And about 10 years ago, I heard Dick and Peggy begin to talk about working the traditions in their relationship. And Dave and I looked at each other, and we said, what a concept. You know, we hear every meeting that the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And Dave and I began to pick up the traditions, and we bought tapes that Dick and Peggy had put out, and we began to sit down and take a look at the traditions in our relationship, and our lives began to change. And you know, when I got married to Dave, my first sponsor, Frank Fitzpatrick, is dead today. And Frank had been a Monsignor priest. You know, God gives you just what you need, and Frank had left the priesthood, and he had married a Taiwanian girl that he had loved all his life, but he fulfilled an obligation to his mom until the day she died, and that was he remained a priest. And when she died, he left the priesthood. And Frank taught me about God, and he taught me about the church, and he helped me to let go of the Baptist church. And he helped me to understand that. And Frank talked about this, you know, this, how he had loved this woman all these years, and he held on to that love. And he says, Polly, I'm going to tell you how to have a marriage that will be perfect all the days of your life. And he says, first of all, you treat Dave like a newcomer. And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And he says, the next thing is that you think of two old oak trees. And he says, you and Dave take your AA program and you plant it firmly into the soil. And you grow, each one of you, in your AA program. And he says, and then one day you'll be like those two oak trees with that very straight trunk. But when you look up, you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. And Dave and I have taken the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we planted ourselves firmly in this program. Because, you see, there was going to come a day when it wasn't all a rose garden. And that day came. And I'm going to kind of share with you the last 3 years of this program, and then I want to share with you about my two sons. Sean talked about not being able to find a job and what he went through. At 57 years old, my husband will be 60 on Tuesday. At 57 years old, my husband is a computer scientist, highly educated. And me, who has no education and has always been intimidated by people who have education, I believe that nothing could ever hurt anybody who was highly educated. And he was laid off from Unisys. And didn't seem like a big deal. You know, I mean, he's a computer scientist. But what we found out is nobody was looking for a 57-year-old computer scientist. And Dave and I had fulfilled some dreams. We had bought a home, and we'd done some of these things. And it looked like, you know, if he didn't get a job quick, we were going to lose that home. And he didn't get a job quick, and we did. And, you know, I'm sitting there with my fist at God. And here I was 16 years sober, 15, and Dave was 16. 15 years sober, I've got my fist at God and said, how can this be happening to us? You know, I go to meetings, and I sponsor people, and I do the deal. Like I'm supposed to get some kind of reward for the privilege of being sober and for the gift. You know, this is a gift. I have been graced by a loving God. I walk in grace for being sober. And somehow I thought that I ought to be rewarded for being sober. And what happened was Dave and I lost that house. And, you know, and I'm saying, this is supposed to happen to newcomers. This does not happen to people who are 15 years sober. Do you know what? The big book says my past will be my greatest asset. I believe that Karen told us about that. Or Sean or somebody told us about that over the weekend. And, you know what? Now when somebody comes in and they say, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my house, blah, 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 it's sweetheart, sit down, been there, done that. And you can stay sober. I promise you, you can stay sober. And Dave ended up finding a job, and it's we've had a lot of learning to live differently. And that's okay. Because, see, what came out of that is that Dave and I learned a lot about people. Because, you see, I've been one of these people. I have been blessed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been blessed to sponsor a lot of people, and I have had great sponsorship. And I was always the one doing the giving. And what I found out is if you're the one doing all the giving, you're in control. But when you're sitting there having to be the one who receives, you're vulnerable. And there's a guy named Sandy Beach down. He's in Florida now. But I remember Sandy talking, and he said, we come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and our receivers are broken. And thanks to what looked like the worst thing that could happen to us, it turned out to be the best because my receiver began to heal. And what I did is I began to love and to feel the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at a much deeper level. Because, you see, I sat vulnerable in this fellowship, and I needed you worse at 15 years than I had ever needed you before. I have two sons in this program. My son James, on January the 3rd, celebrated 12 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. If nobody's told you this morning that you make a difference, please, please, let me tell you. This is a program of attraction, not promotion. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the 12 steps tells me that I am to carry the message, and I am to practice these principles in all my affairs. Because, you see, you never, ever know who's watching. And, you know, and it's real important to me that I be a respectable member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at all times, that my behavior is important. Because, you see, I was told when I was dying because of my son James, because I was watching this brilliant boy die from a disease called alcoholism. And I was told, Polly, you suit up and show up because you may be the only big book James ever reads. And at 6.5 years sober, my son called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And this little boy looked at me with so much disgust. And he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And today I know that I make a difference. And when I walk outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, how I lead my life and how I act, I make a difference. Because, you see, I never, ever know who's watching. And I consider being sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a responsibility. I am a responsible member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I try in every way to carry this program with dignity. Because it is this program that saved my life and has given me every good, decent thing that I have in my life. My oldest son is one of our Al-Anons, and Russ has never found the Al-Anon program, not really. But I understood Russ, and Russ had the kind of desperation that he just hurt so inside. And I'm a lot like Bill, not Dr. Bob, but Bill. I understand about depression. I'm a person who's been depressed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it wasn't until about 10 years ago, or maybe 9 years ago, I read a book called The Language of the Heart. And I hope you pick that book up and read it sometime. And Bill talked in that letter, in his last letter to the Grapevine, about emotional sobriety, our last frontier. And I learned in there how Bill had suffered from depression. And what happened was, is that the only way that he began to lift that depression was to go help another alcoholic. So I know today, better than I've ever known it, the beauty of the very basis of our program, which is one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. And I know when the days get rough and the times get hard, what I need to go do is work with another alcoholic. And what will happen is, it'll keep me out of the pits of depression, and I will be able to go another day. But you see, my son hasn't found that. And Russ was so devastated with his life, and he kept trying to take his life. And I would go into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I entered the rooms of Al-Anon because of James. And I often say that James sent me to the rooms of Al-Anon, and Russ keeps me there. And I began to learn about letting go. But you see, it's one of those things. Just give me the instructions. How do you let go? How do you let go? But when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I was doing something very similar to what I'm doing this morning, except I was doing it in Albany, Georgia. And my daughter-in-law had called me that Friday night, and I was due to speak that Saturday morning. And she told me one more time that my son was in the hospital and that he had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I was devastated. And I was so torn down that morning when I got ready to talk. And I was sharing, and when it was all done, this man walked up to me. And he'd been in our fellowship a long, long time. And he had on an old pair of overalls. And he looked at me just like those southern boys look at you. And he said, "Sweetheart, you and I need to talk." And he said, "And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to read the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. And he is either all things or he's nothing. And that Russ is God's kid. And what God does with his kids is none of your business." With that man's direction and prayers and hanging on to me as I sobbed my heart out, I released my son. And my son hasn't tried to hurt himself in over 8 years. And that's a miracle. Now, I wish Russ was in the rooms of Al-Anon, but what you have taught me is that we all find our path, and it just may not be the one that I choose. Russ moved to L.A. 4 years ago, December. And I'm so grateful for that, because I've had a chance to make amends to my son in a way I never dreamed possible. Because of you, I've been able to live this program around my son, who has not found this program. On May the 23rd, 1993, God gave us a gift beyond my greatest expectation. And his name is Ryan David Klinger Lee. And he's my grandson. And if all of you young people are out there wondering what those kids are good for, let me tell you what they're good for. They make fabulous grandkids. And Ryan's my main man. A little over a year ago, we got some devastating news. I don't know if any of you were in San Diego, but I'll tell you, Ryan was the main attraction. He's this cute little blonde, curly-headed guy, and he looks like a little cherub, and he just turns heads everywhere he goes. And we got some devastating news, and we found out that Ryan's profoundly deaf. One more time, I got my fist at God. How could this be happening to us? Don't you know how many people I sponsor? Don't you know how many meetings I go to? One more time, I was looking for that reward for sobriety. But you see, my perception is so shallow because I didn't know what God had in store. My perception of reality was distorted. So we did as a family would do, and we gathered up together. And you see, here's James and Kelly. And you see, Kelly's a member of this fellowship, too. This little boy has two sober members of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for parents. And I'm here to tell you, you did a great job. They're the very best parents I've ever seen. And I will assure you, nobody taught them how to do that in their own family. That was learned in the bosom of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to be a parent. And Kelly's family is torn apart, and James's family is torn apart. But because of this deafness, these families gather together. And this little boy has created a healing beyond our greatest expectation. And he has brought together a closeness, because you see, if we're ever going to talk to that little boy, we got to learn sign language. And I can remember walking around saying, God, I wish I were bilingual. I just didn't know it was going to be sign language. And if you want to see something precious, you ought to see a 2.5-year-old. And he loves trains, and he just runs around like this, you know, all the time. Signing, it's incredible. And see, because of Ryan, you've introduced me to all these new people. Because you see, whether you know it or not, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are full of the deaf. And you know what the miracle is? Is today I can talk to them. I can speak to a deaf person. And I'm so grateful for that. And you see, if it hadn't have been for Ryan, I'd have never, ever learned where that beauty is and how precious these people are. I would have never, ever learned that. I am so grateful. We're going to have another one in April. And then Rush and Cheryl broke us the news. We're going to have another one in September. My cup runneth over. My cup runneth over. I didn't get what I thought I wanted, but I got so much more. If you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that He's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave and friends like him. But you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct. The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And this morning, I am the woman I always wanted to be. And on most days, not every day, but on most days, I am enough. I am God's kid, and I am enough. We talk about sponsorship in this program. And I have a sponsor. I've had two. And this sponsor has led me for the past 9 years. She had a husband, and her husband's name was Red Aldridge. And Red was like a dad to me. In September a year ago, I was one of the three people that got to deliver Red's eulogy. Because, you see, he died 31 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave me a gift. I never in 9 years heard Red Aldridge ever say one derogatory or negative remark about any single person. And he's got what I want, because I believe that's what it's all about. This is the language of the heart. This is where the heart speaks and the heart listens. This is not about me judging you or you judging me. This is about you loving me and me loving you. My AA sponsor is, some days she knows me and some days she doesn't. But she's still at a meeting just about every single night. And one of us, who she sponsors, takes her there. And my night's Monday. And it's a privilege to pick up Ellen every Monday night and bring her to my home group. She taught me well. Today, I am a woman who's self-supporting through my own contribution. I never, ever knew that I could take care of myself. And I've been the primary breadwinner in my family, and I never knew I could do that. But because of you, you have allowed me to suit up and show up and go to work. And you didn't ask me if I liked it. You just told me to do it. I didn't know how to be faithful. But for 15 years, I have loved one man with all my heart. And I have been faithful and true to that man for 15 years. You taught me how to be a friend, and you taught me about love. You see, today I know that love is an action. If you love someone, you treat them like you love them. You don't tell them that you love them and then push their face in. You treat them like you love them. And for 15 years, Dave and I have treated each other like we love each other. But there was a place that I felt like such a failure, and that was as a mom. And thanks to this program, my sons tell me that I am the mom they always wanted me to be. I'm going to steal a little something from my son's talk. We talk a lot about where Alcoholics Anonymous is going today. And I don't know where it's going. This is what I ask of you. 18 years ago, this program was here for me. 12 years ago, it was here for James. Please, please, my friend, let it be here for Ryan. Because you see, I think he's going to need you. You know, when you have to run tests on little babies, you have to put them to sleep. So we all flew back to Chicago because they were going to run this big, extensive test on Ryan to find out the degree of his deafness. And they gave him the medication, and nothing happened. They gave him the medication again, and nothing happened. The third time he finally went to sleep, and he woke up doing this. That's more in sign language. Please, please, my friend, take this program and cherish it. And don't change it. It's written perfectly, just the way it is. It's been given now to us to cherish. And please continue to cherish it. Because it is the thing that saved my life. And I have a feeling it'll be the thing that saves Ryan's life. So I hope it's here for my grandchildren and your grandchildren. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the therapists started every day with a prayer. And I end my AA talks with it because it's what this program means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless you. I love you.